Well, good morning. Hey, like Russell said, we are so incredibly excited that you guys are here, and here we find ourselves crossing over the halfway point in this series that we have been calling At the Movies. And I don't know about you, but I can speak for myself in this. I have been having an absolute blast over the course of the last 2 weekends, and I cannot believe that we are heading towards the finish line next week. But if you haven't been here for the first 2 weeks of this series, we have been having some fun with movies like Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, and Just Mercy, because we believe that our favorite movies have more to say. And we believe that there are some incredible truths within those movies that we can use to impact our presence and our futures. And here we find ourselves cruising into week 3, and I have to admit, this is my favorite week of the series. If you haven't been a part of At the Movies in the past, what you may not know is this, is every week throughout this series, every single year, we try to switch up the genres, because we know that every single one of us have a different favorite genre of movie, and we want to connect with as many of you as possible. And so we try to do different ones every week of the series. And this week, we cruise in to the sports genre. And for me, that is one that is near and dear to my heart. And you might say, Ben, that's because of your background. That's because you've always played sports all of your life. But there's also a different angle to this and why it holds a special place in my heart. I have so many fond childhood memories of going to the movie theaters or sitting around the living room watching movies like Little Big League and Rookie of the Year with my mother, surprisingly enough. And because of that, it brings back all of these fond childhood memories for me. And undoubtedly, many of you have the exact same fond and nostalgic childhood memories surrounding one genre of movie. It might be horror movies, it might be superhero movies, it may be thrillers, it may be sports movies for you. But every single one of us find ourselves connecting to different genres of movies. And I thought it would be fun to kind of get you guys engaged and participating this morning. I thought it would be fun to bring y'all into the mix. And so this morning, if you came with someone or a group of someones, we're going to do a little group participation activity, all right? What I want you to do is with those people that you came with, I want you to lean over to them and I want you to share with them your favorite genre of movie. Maybe it's a rom-com, maybe it's a sport, maybe it's a superhero, whatever that may be, share with them just your favorite genre of movie. If you came by yourself this morning, you can take out your notes in your weekly and you can jot it on the top of that. Or if you came by yourself and you're single, look for someone else single in your row and answer the question and then exchange phone numbers after that or whatever you need to do. All right? Are we ready? You've got all of about 7 seconds and then I'm gonna cut back in and keep talking. All right? Here we go. Favorite genre, share with it, go. Now, y'all must be the quiet group of the bunch, but at least I heard some sharing going on. And what that signifies to me is this. Like I said, every single one of us connect with different movies for different reasons. But what I know to be true is this. No matter what genre of movie you and I consider to be our favorite genres of movies, what I also know to be true is that that genre of movie is not the same when we are forced to watch it ourselves, right? Back in my pre-kids day, not that long ago, I had Fridays off. Now Fridays are daddy day, and it is, you know, the hardest day of my week. All of y'all stay-at-home mothers, my goodness, bless you. Bless you. But Fridays used to be my day off. And with Krista being a school teacher, it was not her day off. And so it was a day that I had completely to myself. And a while ago, some of y'all remember, it's now defunct and bankrupt, but there used to be this subscription service called MoviePass. And for about all of 3 months, you would subscribe to this thing, and it would allow you to go to any movie you wanted to completely free of charge. And then they started to lose boatloads of money, and they put in all these restrictions, and it never worked out the way it was supposed to. But Krista and I, we got those cards. And so a couple of times, I got the bright idea that there was a movie coming out that I knew Krista would not like, but I was somewhat interested in. And so I would not drag her to the theater or waste one of our date nights watching a movie that she would not like. And so I was going to go on my day off with my movie pass and catch it myself. And that afternoon, when Krista would get home, she'd ask what I did for the day. And I told her I'd go to the movies. And she'd look at me and ask how it was. And I would look at her stone cold in the eye and tell her, oh, it was so good. It was so nice to do it by myself and to get away. And up until this point, because of that little inkling of pride down in me, or this giant thing of pride down in me, I have never looked my wife in the face and admitted this to her. You see, every time I would tell her, oh, it's so good, it was good to get away and do it on my own and have me time, the reality was I was holding back and was not being absolutely truthful. She would look at me like I was crazy and she'd smile at me. And you know with that smile what she was saying? Guys, you know this, right? You're not telling me the full truth. You are crazy. And the reality was, is my wife was correct. Going to the movies by myself just wasn't the same. Like, I was like, people are looking at me, wondering why this weird dude is coming into this animated film by himself or whatever it might be. And it just wasn't the same. And what I recognize is that it just isn't movies in our life that aren't the same when we do them alone. You see, when we really look hard enough into every aspect of our life, what we will find is some of our fondest memories in life are the memories we have when we are doing things with other people. It may be standing across the altar from the woman that we are about to marry. It may be holding the baby in our arms for the very first time that me and the person that I love created. It may be the fishing trips with our fathers or the nights we were sitting around the bonfire laughing until 2 a.m. Whatever it was, some of our greatest, fondest memories in life are the memories we have when we are doing things with others. And on the inverse, when we look hard enough into the painful moments of our lives, what we also see is that some of the most painful seasons we have walked through are the seasons where we feel like we are walking in isolation. Am I right? It's the moments of your life where you have a circumstance in which you feel like no one else fully understands what you're going through. It's the moments of your life where you are buried deep in a mess and all the junk of your life, and it's so messy that nobody else wants to wade into that. Nobody else wants to extend a helping hand. Nobody else wants to get into that mess. And so you journey through that mess alone, trying to find your way out the other side. For some of us, it's the moments of our lives where we feel like we were always the bridesmaid and never the bride. Those moments of isolation are some of the most painful moments of our lives. And on both sides of the equation, it points out this one critical truth, that we, every single one of us, no matter how introverted we may claim to be, every single one of us were created for connection. We were created for connection. That was our Creator's design in our life. And yet, what tends to happen is that in light of that being created for connection, we have a tendency to drift towards isolation. You ever been there before? You see, from the very first moment that God formed mankind from the dust and he placed him on this earth, for 5 days, God had been looking at his creation and he'd been saying, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. And then he created man, the pinnacle of his creation, and he put him here on earth. And he looked at man and he said, it is not good. Not because we were screwed up and all. There was something that was off, something that wasn't quite right, something that acknowledges that truth that we just uncovered, that every single one of us were created for connection. This morning, we're going to look at what God pinpointed as the problem. We're going to jump into the book of Genesis, chapter 2. If you haven't done so already, that's a perfect opportunity for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And if you crack that open on the inside, you'll find a notes page that you can follow along with us through the text, through the fill in the blanks. But here is what God pinpoints as this problem, this tension that has been created when he sets man alone on this earth. Check this out, starting in verse 18. It says this. Then the Lord God said, it is not good. Why was it not good? It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper who is just right for him. In this moment, it was this statement, not just over Adam, it was this statement over you and this statement over me, that we were not created to stand alone, that we were created to do life together. But here's the tension point. Doing life together requires intentionality. Doing life with other people or other organizations requires hard work. And this brokenness inside of us, because it requires intentionality and hard work to experience connection and relationship and teamwork in our lives, this brokenness inside of us, when we get complacent, will always force us to drift towards isolation. And in that drift towards isolation, here's the crazy part. We begin to believe that proximity equates to connection. And just because we are around people, we are connecting with people, and that's all the work we have to do. We've been led to believe this oftentimes in our marriages, right? That between Krista and I, we live in the same household, we sleep in the same bed, and so we must be connecting with each other. But if you're not actively working on connection, you are slowly drifting to your own corners of life, working on your own jobs, your own problems, raising the kids in your own way. We experience this in our office places or in the factory. We're on a line with 10 other guys. We're in cubicles with 30 other people. And so because we have proximity with people, there's connection. But oftentimes when we don't pursue that connection, what ultimately happens is we drift into our own silos. And we begin to believe that I just have to get my job done. And there's so much to do here that I don't need to help anybody else or venture into anybody else's territory. And so I'll just do it myself. And time again, no matter what area of life it is that we have drifted into isolation, we look at our lives and we look at our past and we have a tendency to wonder why our life hasn't amounted to what we wanted it to be. Why we're left wanting more in our marriages. Why we're disappointed and seeking something different. It's because we've never really done the hard work, the intentionality that is required to find connection, what we are meant for. We slowly drift into isolation and live a life that is less than. See, this morning, what if I told you this? What if I told you that every achievement and every success in your life hinged on your ability and willingness to do life with others? That every achievement and every success in our lives hinged on our willingness to become a part of a team, to link arms with at least one other person and to go at it together. You see, God's design for our lives was connection. His design was also for us to live the best life possible. And so don't you think that those two things go hand in hand? That in order for us to live the best life possible, it must be done within connection. It must be done within relationship. It must be done within connection. And yet so often, I don't know about you, but this is me to a T. So often I find myself drifting to the place in which I believe that the greatest life is found based upon my own willpower, my own hard work, my own way of getting it done. And when I start to believe that, I start to live a life that is less than. I start to experience a marriage that is less than. I start to be a parent that is less than. I start to be a boss that is less than. And every single area of our lives, if we want to experience the dream that we have for our lives and the dream that God has for our lives to live the best life possible, it is necessary for us to do it together. The movie Miracle is based upon the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team. At the time we pick up this movie, there are two critical things happening in the world. The first is this. We find the United States and the Soviet Union entrenched in the Cold War. There is absolute hatred between these two nations. And on the back end of that, more relevant to this movie, what we also find, the second thing is this, is that the Soviet Union hockey team is the most successful hockey team in the world. In fact, when we pick up this movie, they have won the last four Olympic gold medals. No U.S. Olympic hockey team has had success against them in the last two decades. And what we also know to be true is this. Not even the NHL All-Stars, that's a professional hockey league, not even the NHL All-Stars find success against the Soviet Union national team. And on the back end of that, there is this group of guys who have come together to determine why we have not had success. And to really throw out there that there's really no hope that this ragtag group of amateurs, in 1980, they were still using amateurs for all Olympic sports, that these amateurs would have any success over the Soviet Union team. As they begin to lose hope and they're attempting to diagnose the problem, they set up this interview with Coach Herb Brooks, head hockey coach at the University of Minnesota, one of the most successful college hockey coaches of the time. As he sits there and they begin to repeat that we just haven't been able to beat them and there's no way that we can beat them going forward, Herb Brooks looks at the problem and he gives this powerful diagnosis. Check this out.
That's when we put our best on the ice with them last year. Professional all-stars. They still beat us.
It wasn't because you weren't good enough.
All-star teams fail because they rely solely on the individual's talent. The Soviets win because they take that talent and they use it inside a system that's designed for the betterment of the team. My goal is to beat them at their own game.
This is our life to a T. We've been led to believe by that whisper inside of us or the culture around us. The success is found when we put our individual achievements up to the test. But the greatest successes in life are found when we join our individual successes with others to create a team, to work together at it. And yet here we find ourselves so often in this drift towards isolation, this pull inside of every single one of us that is coaxing us just to worry about yourself, just to get your own, just to go about it without having to worry about anybody else. And so the question is, how do we fight that drift? If the best possible life, the life that we have dreamed of and the life that God destined us to live is determined by whether or not we can do life together, how do we fight the drift of isolation and find ourselves engaging in connection? And this morning, I want to introduce you to four critical steps. Four critical steps that I believe with all of my heart, if we can do these steps consistently, will drastically change our lives and our futures for the better. The first is this. If we want to fight the drift towards isolation, we must be people who refuse to hold on to the past. Did we just break out the hardest one first? See, deep down in all of us, there's this tendency. If you're anything like me, right, sports-minded people, right, everything in life is worth doing when you keep score. And oftentimes, that carries into our relationships, doesn't it? It's like, I'm going to keep score of all the times you have wronged me in the past. And I know we're married and I know we're supposed to be doing life together, but it's just easier if we tally up the score and we say who's ahead and who's behind, who is owed more in all of this. And what ends up happening is we've been keeping score for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years of our marriage, of our relationship. And those things begin to add up and they begin to create separation between us and our spouse. Because every time something similar to that one thing that happened 10 years ago happens, we pull that out and we hang it over the person's head. Ever been there before? Nobody wants to admit it. I'll just raise my hand. We hang on to these grudges day after day after day, and then we wonder why we just don't feel intimacy with our spouse. We wonder why we're gun shy to enter into relationship with anyone else because we've been hanging on to all of the moments that we have been stabbed in the back by a coworker or a neighbor or a friend. We're reluctant to ever enter into relationship or teamwork or connectedness again. Why? Because we're too busy holding on to the past to take hold of what God has for us in our future. You can't grab onto the future when you're so busy holding on to the past. Your hands are full. It's the very reason why these 20 young men were called together with one singular purpose: to win a U.S. Olympic gold medal. And yet, in light of that one singular purpose, these 20 young men could not put behind them their rivalries and grudges that were found in their college hockey days. And as they experience this day after day in practice, Coach Herb Brooks looks on at another fight that is happening, and he offers this critical advice. Check this out.
You want to settle old scores, you're on the wrong team. We move forward starting right now. We start becoming a team right now. Skating. Passing. Flow. Creativity. That is what this team is all about, gentlemen. Not old rivalries. So, why don't we start with some introductions? You know, get to know each other a little bit. Where are you from? Who you are? You know, go ahead.
Rob McClanahan, St. Paul, Minnesota.
Who you play for?
For you, here at the U.
Jack?
Jack O'Callaghan, Charlestown, Mass. Boston University.
Over here.
I'm Ralph Cox. I'm from wherever's not going to get me hit.
Very good.
You want to hold grudges? You're on the wrong team. When all we are concerned with hanging on to the past, we're living a less than life. And time again, we drift into this place. These grudges nudge us away from connection again and again and again. And there's this turning point in the movie. It's one I didn't have time to show you, but it's so incredibly powerful. These men go up in an exhibition match against the Swedish national team, and they end up tying them. And after the match is over, Herb Brooks calls all of them back onto the ice, and he says, "You don't want to work during the game? Then we'll work after it." And he starts making them skate lines back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And he just keeps saying, "Again, again, again." And there's this moment where they are exhausted, and they've turned off the lights to the ice rink, and they are still going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and they're puking on the ice. And he tells his assistant coach, "Blow the whistle again." And in that moment, the captain, Mike Ruzioni, speaks up. And he says, "Mike Ruzioni, much like this moment that we saw at the end here, Buffalo, New York." And the coach looks at him and says, "Who do you play for?" "I play for the United States of America." This moment where old rivalries and old grudges had been let go of was the turning point for their future successes. And the same is true with you and I. It's the reason why Paul, when he was writing to the church, explaining to them what it looked like to come together and to make a difference, to make an impact in the world around them, how they truly become the team that God had created them to be. This is what Paul wrote to them. Check this out in Romans chapter 12. He says, "Never pay back evil with more evil." What's that sound like? Don't hold grudges. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. Do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Dear friends, never take revenge. Never keep score so that you can bring that score back and hold it over that person for the reason why you wronged them. You are justified in wronging them because they wronged you 10 years ago, and now you're just bringing it back. Never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. Until we stop holding on to the past, we will never play the game of life in the way that God intended us to play it. Second, we must be people who are willing to find common ground. We back up just a few verses in Romans chapter 12, verse 9. Just 8 verses before this, in the same explanation to the local church, he writes this: "Don't just pretend to love others, really love them. Together, hate what is wrong and hold tightly to what is good." Can we just throw something out there? Like this is a truth that so often eludes us. You will never find another person on this earth who you agree with everything about. Am I right? We will never find anybody else on this earth who we agree with absolutely everything about. It's not possible. And so let go of that unrealistic expectation and that unrealistic dream, and simply hold on to the things that you agree about and drive forward towards that. Become passionate about changing the world in this respective way and work together at doing it. Find things collectively that you hate, that you know are not right in the world, and work at solutions to making them better. That's what this looks like. That's what God intended us to do. That's what connection is meant to be. Not about you holding the same perspective as everybody else. That's the only way you find connection, because that just will not happen. We are created in such a way that we are capable of pushing forward together even when we hold different perspectives on some things. Hello. Are we back in the Talking Points political series? That is how we find connection when we drift towards isolation. There's this incredible moment in camp where Coach Brooks is pushing them past their limits, and he is harsh, he's brutal every single day with these guys. And the assistant coach, Coach Craig, has never seen anything like it. And he goes to the team doctor, and he says, "You've been with Herb for over 20 years. What's going on here? Is he always like this, or what's the purpose behind this?" And when he asks that question of the team doctor, he gets this incredible insight. Check this out.
Hey, Doc, let me ask you a question, all right?
Well, of course.
You worked with Herb for a long time, right?
Oh, I've known her for quite some time.
So tell me something. Does he always treat his players like this?
No. No, no, this I have never seen. But, no, but Craig, believe me, Herb has a reason for everything he does.
Well, he's ending up with 20 players who hate his guts.
No, maybe if they hate him, they won't have time to hate each other.
Maybe if they hate him, they won't have time to hate each other. If they just find common ground in something that they can push forward on. Find common ground, even if it's in your hatred of something in this world, so that you can experience and accomplish something better. And then third, we must be willing to find the right people. We must be willing to find the right people. You see, I believe with all of my heart, the difference between where we are and where God wants us to be is found in whether or not we have the right people around us. Did you catch that? The difference between where we are and where God wants us to be is found in whether or not we have the right people around us. We say this all the time around here. Your friends determine the quality and direction of your life. If you don't like your life, change your circle. We have to be willing to say no to the wrong people and to stop setting standards that the rest of the world sets. Quit looking to surround ourselves with people who are the most popular or the most fun or the most successful. We have to look for the right people who are looking to grow themselves and want to push us forward and want to love us and want to push us to love others and make an impact and difference in this world as well. It's not always about finding the best. It's about finding the right people. And there's this moment in camp where they're trying to choose their final roster. And Herb Brooks presents this roster to his assistant coach on day one. They have 7 days of camp to determine the team that they're going to put forward. And on day one, he presents the roster. And when he does that, he gives this incredible insight to his assistant coach about how we will be successful moving forward. Check this out.
Wait a minute. What's this?
26 names. Tough part will be getting it down to 20 before the opening ceremonies.
This is the final roster? You're kidding me, right? This is our first day here. We got a week of this. What about the advisory staff? Aren't they supposed to have a say in this?
Technically, I guess I don't.
You're missing some of the best players.
I'm not looking for the best players, Craig. I'm looking for the right ones.
I'm not looking for the best players. I'm looking for the right ones. Your and my successes in life will be determined by whether or not we are willing to look for the right people. It's the reason why King Solomon gives such straight-to-the-point advice when he says, "Walk with the wise and become wise. Find the right people and you will become a right person. But associate with fools," and he doesn't say you'll become a fool. He goes further than that. He grants a promise. Associate with fools, hang around with the wrong people, and here's what will happen. You will experience trouble. But in this drift, What oftentimes becomes the tension point for me is this: I don't know where to begin. I don't even know where to start in looking for the right people. And so this morning, I thought I'd give us a few simple tips that would point us in the right direction of finding the right people. The first is this: if you want to find the right people, start serving. It's the quickest and easiest way for us to surround ourselves with people who understand that this life isn't meant to be lived all about me. To surround ourselves with people who understand that the greatest things in life are accomplished when they are accomplished as a part of a team. Serve and rock a baby. Serve and serve coffee. Hand out a weekly at the door. Check in kids for their environments. It doesn't have to be some giant, time-consuming serve. Just start somewhere. And surround yourself with people who are driving in the same direction as you. Two, get in a community group. You see, we believe with all of our hearts around here that life is best lived when it's done in circles, not in rows. When we surround ourselves with people who are in the same stage of life as us and who want to live a better life than what we are presently living. Surround yourself with people like that, who all want to grow and move forward. Third, not only do we have to start serving, not only should we find a community group, but we have to slowly start saying no to the wrong people. I start throwing things out like serving and being a part of a small group of people, and the thought that comes to every single one of our minds is this: Ben, I don't have any time for that. I get it. We all need margin in our lives. Guess how we create margin? By saying no to the things that we should be saying no to. By saying a few more no's to the wrong things and a few more yeses to the right things. And then let me just throw in a fourth one here real quick. If we want to find the right people in our lives, sometimes it starts by becoming the right person. You've heard me say this before. Become the spouse you want your spouse to be. Become the friend you're looking for. Grow to such a point that you are becoming the right person in somebody else's life. Now, how do we do that? Sometimes it's simply done like this: by getting over our pride and being willing to share our lives, share our stories, share our past with others. There's this incredible story in the Old Testament. It's a story that many of us have heard before, and I know I should never wait this long to bring in my visual aids because y'all have been wondering for like 25 minutes, like, what did this dude bring that little baggie, this little merce up to the stage with him? You see, there's this story of David and Goliath, and it's one that we have all heard before. But in this story, I was reading it this week, and there was something incredible that struck me that was brand new. If you've never heard the story before, the Philistines and the Israelites are mortal enemies. They are at war with one another. In the middle of this war, there is this giant named Goliath that steps to the middle of the battlefield and he says, "Let's put an end to this once and for all. You send your best soldier out to the middle of this battlefield, have him face me, and whoever wins, the other side will become slaves to the winner." And day after day, he stands there and he taunts the Israelites, and they're all shaking in their boots, and no one walks out to the middle of the battlefield. And one day, this shepherd boy, David, not even a soldier in the army, he's bringing lunch to his brothers who are on the battlefield. He hears the taunts of this man, Goliath, and he gets this bright idea: "I'll do it." So what does David do? He goes down to a foreign riverbed. One that he had never been to before, one that was not his, filled with stones that he had never seen before. And he bends down in the riverbed and he begins to pick up these stones and to put them in his satchel. And he walks back to the center of the battlefield, puts it in a slingshot, and strikes the Philistine giant on the forehead and kills him dead there. As I read this story, what began to come into focus for me was this: every single one of us in our lives are carrying around stones, stones from our past, and all of our stones look just a little bit different. For some of us, we're carrying around the stone in our life of a parent who was diagnosed with cancer and gone way too early. Maybe for some of us, the stone that we carry around If someone that we loved was diagnosed with a disease and they were never the same again. For some of us, the stone that we carry around is that miscarriage, that child that we lost, that child that we were never even able to have because we've struggled with infertility for all of our marriage. For some of us, the stone that we carry around is the addiction, that mistake in our past that we would never want to be exposed. That thing that we're embarrassed of, that thing that we feel like if anyone ever knew about that, they would look at me with judgment, as if I was less than. And so we hold on to all of these stones and we keep them hidden. And in that process, I think oftentimes what we miss is this. What if your stones were meant to slay somebody else's giant? What if your stones had the power to kill somebody else's Goliath? And we've been walking around this life, keeping them to ourselves, holding them in our bag, making sure that nobody else sees them. And what we're actually doing is depriving somebody else of slaying a giant in their life that we have the ability to help them slay. You want to find the right people? Start by being the right person. Share your story. Share your stones. Engage in some openness and some vulnerability. And while it won't be easy, I promise you, you will see a difference. And then lastly, we finish here. We must be willing to be a people who remind ourselves constantly that connection is powerful. We come back to this passage. We remind ourselves of what King Solomon wrote. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help, but someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm, but how can one be warm together? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. Did I say this requires intentionality? It requires us to remind ourselves that doing life together is more powerful than doing life alone. If we don't remind ourselves of this, you know what happens? We keep putting off connection. We say it's not the right time to serve. We step away from our community groups when things get uncomfortable. We start to believe we're just not ready to make a difference in the world or to make an impact, and so we just don't do it. And we neglect the fact that we weren't meant for isolation. You were meant for community. You were meant for connection. You were meant to experience a better life because of teamwork. Just before the semifinal match with the Soviet Union, Coach Brooks walks into the locker room, and he gives this incredible final charge to his team before they take the ice. And it's a final charge that you and I need to hear in this moment as we look at charging forward in our lives and whether or not we will do it alone or whether or not we will do it together. Check this out.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team. You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. and you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Great moments are born from great opportunities. And in your life, whether you see it or not, you sit on the cusp of an incredible opportunity. You are perfectly positioned just as you are to make a difference in this world. You were meant for this marriage. You were meant for this parenting role. You were meant to be in this workplace. You were meant to make an impact in this world right where you sit. But what lies in front of you in making that impact is whether or not you will acknowledge this truth. Teamwork makes the dream work. If you want to live a dream life, you have to be willing to be a part of a team and link arms with someone else. Let's take a step out there and to do it together for the sake of realizing something greater than what you are presently living. For the sake of, dare I say, experiencing a miracle in your life, in your circumstances, but also in the lives of the people around you. There's this iconic call from Al Michaels that somewhat finishes the movie that I thought we could not leave without seeing this. As they invested themselves into each other and into the team around them, they began to experience something incredible come to fruition, and we see it here at the end of the movie. Check this out.
Come on, boys, get out of there!
Crouton.
He doesn't know what to do.
36 seconds. Makarov over the blue line to Maltsev. Fight. Another save. Fighting for position. Marlow trying to get it away from Kharlamov along the boards. Again, coming to you from the Olympic ice arena.
Come on, baby.
The U.S. huge underdogs. Leading the Soviet Union. Johnson over to Ramsey. Leg 11 of his check by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Tomorrow. Up to Colt. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
When they gave themselves to each other, the dream was realized. Dare I say, the miraculous happened. The obstacle that couldn't be overcome was overcome. You see, all of us stand at the doorstep of circumstances or things in our life in which it feels like I desperately need a miracle. I need something to come through to fix this, to make this better. And we've been led to believe that miracles happen at the hands of the supernatural. But sometimes, dare I say, sometimes God stands back and he says, you want to experience a miracle in your life, in your circumstance, in the world around you? It's not about experiencing the supernatural. It's about you taking steps that are not natural. Doing things no one else is willing to do. Fighting the drift and linking arms for the sake of the best possible life. And so this morning, When you came in, on each and every one of your seats, there was a hockey puck and a silver marker. Right now, I want you to take that out from underneath of your seat or beside you, wherever you set it. And here's what I want to challenge you to. For every single one of us, there is someone or something that we are being called, nudged towards. The linking arms with that person or that organization for the sake of living out a better life, making a bigger impact, leaving a better legacy. And we've been putting it off. We've been saying we aren't ready. We've been avoiding the uncomfortable. But your moment is now. Great moments are born from great opportunities. For some of us, it's our spouse. And we've been led to believe that proximity equals connection, and we've just been living in proximity for far too many years. And it's time for us to flip the script. And it's time for us to make a commitment by writing the name of our spouse on that hockey puck and becoming intentional about connection with that person. For some of us, it's the church or an organization which we need to jump in and start serving. And I'll rock a baby once a month. I'll pass out a weekly once a month. I'll pack meals once a month. For some of us, it's the name of a kid. One of our children that's been incredibly difficult. And it's been easy because of their challenges to ignore them or to walk away from them. For our relationship, now that they're adults, to become estranged. And we know we want better than that. We know that our job as a parent isn't over yet. And it's time for us to make what's wrong right. For some of us in this room, what needs to go down on our hockey puck is God. We believe in God, but we've been drifting into our own isolation for far too long. We've been trying to fix it on our own, trying to do this life on our own, and it just hasn't worked out, and our life isn't what we wanted it to be, and we're wondering why. For some of us, it's because we've allowed that one relationship that's the most important relationship in our lives to be put on the back burner. See, what I'm challenging you to is this. Do not leave this place without a name of someone or something going down on your hockey puck. And I'm challenging you to take your shot. To not let another week go past, but every day this week to look at that and to take the steps that are necessary to reconnect, to lean back in, and to see the difference that's made in your life when we stop doing it alone. And we start going at it together. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning we thank you for being a God that set the example of teamwork by sending your son. You wanted to do this life with us so desperately that you paved the way by sending your only son. God, this morning, you're calling us to take uncomfortable steps, to take extraordinary steps, to take steps that are not ordinary for the world around us. But you're calling us to take steps back towards connection because you designed us in such a way that our best possible life is realized and lived out when we do it together. And so, God, may this be the week. May this be our time where we stop putting it off and we follow the nudge. Make it right again. We take our shot and we take the name that is on our hockey puck seriously and we step forward with courage. It's in your name that I pray.